From WHQR Public Radio in Wilmington, North Carolina, it's the Coastline Candidate Interviews. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. New Hanover County is made up of four municipalities, the city of Wilmington, three beach towns, and some unincorporated areas. Wrightsville Beach is one of those three beach towns, governed by a mayor and board of aldermen. The population, according to the U.S. Census Bureau, is slightly more than 2,500. About 98% of the population is white, with a median household income of $64,000. Mayor Bill Blair faces no challenger this election year. He was scheduled to appear on today's Coastline, but dropped out a few days earlier due to a business conflict. He first ran for mayor in 2011, challenging then-incumbent David Cignotti. He lost by a 62% margin. 2 years later, he ran again, unopposed, and garnered 98% of the vote. In 2015, he again had no challenger and took 95%. The Board of Aldermen in Wrightsville Beach has five candidates vying for two open seats. Only one of the incumbents with an expiring term is running for re-election. Today, we're going to meet Ken Dahl, one of those five candidates. We'll also meet a candidate for town council in Curie Beach, where six people are seeking a seat. Mayor Emily Swearingen is running again, but not for mayor. She's seeking a post as a council member. Current councilman Craig Blazinski is running again, seeking that mayoral seat, and is facing challenger Chris Held. We'll meet all three of them in the coming weeks. Today, we meet Dolores Coe. Each candidate will talk one-on-one with me in the second and third segments, answering my questions and yours. There's one way to get your question in during this live Wednesday edition. Email us at coastline@whqr.org. The phone lines are in use for what we're hoping is the last day of our fall pledge drive. And remember, each candidate appears in only one segment. But first, it's a conversation with a local political scientist. Aaron King is an assistant professor in the Department of Public and International Affairs at the University of North Carolina, Wilmington. Aaron King, welcome to Coastline.
It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Some of your areas of expertise include American political institutions and political parties. So talk to us right now about the trend towards unaffiliated voters. Are we seeing that on a national level? Is that a state phenomenon or both?
I think it definitely is something that's happening at the national level and across the country. We have people that are increasingly upset with the political parties, what they stand for sometimes in the infighting. So people are increasingly identifying as independents. At the same time, I think it's important to point out just because someone identifies as an independent doesn't mean that they act like an independent. So if you just look at a survey question, for example, from Gallup, you might see about a third of the population is an independent, a third of the population is Republican, and a third is Democrat. But if you actually ask the independents if they tend to lean towards one political party or the other, a good portion of them would say, yes, I'm more closer to the Democratic Party or closer to the Republican Party, which leaves probably only about 10% of the population that is a pure independent. And those are the folks that are really most unlikely to participate in politics. So you have quite a few people that identify as an independent but still act and behave like partisans.
So how does that affect then political strategists who are looking at this growing body of independents in the state of North Carolina? I'm not sure what the numbers are now in terms of voter registration, but I do know that body is growing. Is it harder for them to strategize?
Well, I think you just need to message a little bit differently. I mean, it's always been popular to campaign against the party insiders on either side of the aisle, or campaign against the folks in Washington for turning their back on the great people of the state of North Carolina. And at the same time, knowing that even people who identify as independents who might have a bone to pick with a political party, at home, in their heart, they still act very much and believe things that Republicans and Democrats believe in. And so there definitely is a difference between how candidates message and what their beliefs actually are. And I think that corresponds to the beliefs that the voters have and what they might actually want to see.
So are you saying then that the leaners, the ones who are registered as unaffiliated voters, but they're leaners, are essentially unaffiliated because they have a bone to pick?
Well, I think it could be that. I will say that research has shown that sometimes people that self-identify as leaners although they admit to leaning towards one political party, sometimes they act more like partisans, even more so than the people who identify as weak partisans. And so I do think that there is a level of political sophistication. It's like saying I haven't decided who to vote for or I'm unaffiliated. It frees you from the constraints of the in-the-mud party politics. At the same time, I think it's very difficult for people to be totally unaffiliated. People have connections from either how they grew up or issues that they care about. But I think you're right. We definitely are seeing an increase in the number of people that identify as an independent, even if they don't necessarily act that way.
Is there any kind of pattern when you look at generation to generation? Do the children tend to join the opposite party of their parents, or do they tend to carry the mantle of the family political affiliation? Or is that not something you can really track?
Oh, I think that's very interesting. This is all really about political socialization. If your listeners think back to their first connection to politics, it was probably from their parents. And so I think at first people do tend to favor the party affiliation and issue positions of their parents because that's what they grew up knowing. Just like you grow up and you're part of a religious group, sometimes even before you know what you're doing, it just is what you do on Sunday morning, right? And at the same time, I think for different people, that responds differently as they grow up. Sometimes when they move away, when they go off to college, they're exposed to new things, which pulls them in a different direction. Sometimes what they're exposed to reinforces their current beliefs. So it's a little bit more complicated, but certainly I think in political socialization, your first views of politics, often from your parents, are going to be consistent with your parents. At the same time, we know that people will always see their parents as a bit more conservative than they are. Even the people who are Democrats will say that perhaps they're a little bit more liberal-leaning than their parents. So I think part of that's just a generational thing, too.
Do people get more conservative as they get older?
Well, I think as people grow up, their life changes and they look at things a little bit differently. We do know that older people tend to be a little bit more conservative, particularly on financial matters. Younger folks are particularly more liberal on social issues. So there definitely are things that change over the course of your life. At the same time, when people identify as a partisan, even early on by the time they're in college or in their 20s, if they identify as a Democrat or Republican, it's unlikely that they'll change very much. Again, you might identify as someone that's independent, but in your heart, you're still a bit of a partisan.
You're listening to Coastline. We're talking today with Aaron King. He's a political scientist at the University of North Carolina, Wilmington. As we move through the 2017 municipal election season, this interview was pre-recorded, so we're not taking questions, but we do welcome your questions in the next two segments during the live show. We're talking about municipal elections. In another segment, we talked about how engagement, voter turnout, is notoriously low, especially in comparison to other election years. Can you just talk a little bit about the effect that having nonpartisan elections at the municipal level might have on these races? Do you think that hurts voter turnout?
Well, to be sure, some of these races are different than the partisan elections at the state or federal level. The same issues we talk about in the presidential race are different at the local level. So in one way, freeing them from a party label is helpful. At the same time, there's definitely a cost, particularly in terms of turnout, as you mentioned. Partisanship, that label of Democrat or Republican, it's very useful to voters. Whether or not their views are correct doesn't quite matter as much as when you say those words, stereotypes come to mind for people, and it helps them decide if the local dog catcher is a Democrat, then, oh, they must be great. They must love animals, or they're a terrible person. How could anyone vote for them, right? So that label is really helpful, and it makes it easier to participate in the local in the political process more generally. So at the local level, without that label there, voters have to work quite a bit harder to figure out what the candidates actually stand for.
So it takes more work to vote, to really vote at the municipal level. What does that mean in terms of the people who wind up doing that work? That 10.5% in New Hanover County, say, who turned out in 2015 to vote, who are those people?
Well, they're certainly not representative of the broader population. If we look at national elections for president, you might have voter turnout at 60%. And even those 60% are not representative of the broader population. So at the local level, when it's down to 10, 11%, the people that are participating are certainly more likely to be politically engaged. They have issues that they really care about. But I certainly think that it's probably a biased portion of the population, and not necessarily a bias in one direction, but what they want is likely what the candidates and the local officials are going to respond to. Rightly or wrongly, that's who's speaking, that's who's participating, that's who the candidates and office holders respond to. And so to the extent that people are willing to not engage in local politics, you're really leaving it up to a much smaller portion of the population to make decisions for you.
The friends and relatives of the candidates.
Sure.
In The Dying Art of Disagreement, political commentator Brett Stevens observes, our disagreements may frequently hoarsen our voices, but they rarely sharpen our thinking, much less change our minds. It behooves us to wonder why. And he goes on, and this is in the face of the polarization that we're seeing across America, to listen and understand, to question and disagree, to treat no proposition as sacred and no objection as impious, to be willing to entertain unpopular ideas and cultivate the habits of an open mind. This is what I was encouraged to do by my teachers at the University of Chicago. And he says, in other words, to disagree well, you must first understand well. And he says that means reading and listening and really seeking out that other point of view. Most of us don't do that. In fact, for most of us, it's beyond distasteful to do that. Why? Is that kind of a new growing phenomenon, or is this something that's just always been part of human nature?
I think it's part of human nature. We don't like to think that that our views are incorrect. We don't like to think that maybe we don't see the world as it perhaps actually is. I think that increasingly we surround ourselves with people that agree with us, both by choice and sometimes not by our choice, but in our social groups, in our classes, in our friends, that it's becoming increasingly difficult to imagine that someone could possibly disagree with you, and they might not be entirely crazy. If you think of the craziest political person you know, and it might very well be yourself, you probably think that you're right. That politics is easy. If everyone just did exactly what I wanted to do, every problem would be solved. And so to the extent that no one's willing to do what I want them to do, doesn't compute with us, right? I think if people realized that these issues are not completely black and white, there's many shades of gray, and that even your neighbor who might be a great person might completely see the world differently from you. And because of that, because these issues are complicated, it's worth having a real conversation about. But going into that conversation, you need to admit that perhaps your views might not be right, right? As much as we decry politicians and political parties and partisanship, many of these people are quite experienced and understand some of the issues here. If there was a solution that made everyone happy, perhaps we'd already have it.
Well, you mentioned that a lot of these issues are very complicated and much more nuanced than we actually typically think about them. Do you observe resistance? Do you observe this closing of the American mind on your own campus? Is it harder to kind of entertain unpopular ideas or ideas that might threaten someone's sense of identity?
Well, I think that, you know, when I'm dealing with undergrads at UNCW, in part, many people have political beliefs. Even sometimes they might not understand why they have the political beliefs that they have. So people are not always perhaps the most confident. And so then sometimes if you challenge their beliefs or if they're challenged by another student, they aren't quite sure what to make of it, which sometimes makes them be quieter in class. At the same time, I think that if people acknowledge that many of us have beliefs, even if we don't have a factual understanding for why we have those beliefs, that perhaps it's okay. A college campus is an interesting place because you have people from all over the state, all over the country, and people from different backgrounds understandably have different views about the world. And so as a political scientist, my goal is to sort of move beyond the partisan politics and move towards more of an empirical assessment of why things happen. And as I do that, and as other political scientists do that in their classes, I think it definitely frees up the students to think about things a little bit differently. Not that they'll dismiss their partisan predispositions or ideological views, but rather that they can see the world a bit more clearly to understand why you and I might have totally different views about the world and issue prescriptions for the problems that we face. But at the same time, we aren't crazy, and perhaps we can actually find some common ground if we talk about those things.
That empirical assessment, how do you do that? How do you undertake that?
it's very difficult because, again, even I remember back to high school, it was all just about arguing about politics.
Have you had to work to challenge your own embedded beliefs? I mean, have you run across your own beliefs that you didn't even know you had?
I don't think any of my students know my party affiliation or my individual issue positions, and I think that that's exactly how I want it to be. It's not my job to preach to the students about what they should think, but rather to have them open their mind to other things. I will say it is difficult to do sometimes. I have beliefs about things just like anybody else does, but at the same time, I don't want that to cloud the judgments of the students. And I will say that as I've sort of gone on this mission to be empirical and nonpartisan and everything I do, I mean, after all, that's the job of a scientist. It just so happens I'm a political scientist. It definitely helps me consume the world around me. And I'll admit sometimes I don't even know what I think about issues because I feel like I do have a better understanding of how complicated they are and also the views on both sides of the aisle. So, again, I would encourage anyone to try to take a step back and look at things from a bit different view. And, again, don't necessarily change your views about the world or your party affiliation, but stand back for a second and acknowledge that somebody might just think things are different than you do.
Aaron King, thank you so much for joining us today.
Very happy to be here.
You're listening to the Coastline Candidate Interviews. Remember, Election Day is November 7th. When we come back from this break, we'll meet our first candidate. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline.